Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
I must tell you, Nancy, I thoroughly enjoyed the entire experience. I felt like I was just having a casual conversation with an old friend. So it was quite enjoyable.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guest is Dr. Cedric Bryant of the American Council on Exercise, known as ACE. I invited Dr. Bryant into this conversation to initially hear about his journey as an innovator and thought leader and how he's moving and innovating the health and fitness in that arena. And we learned that his parents grew up and made a huge innovative move from Georgia to New Jersey. And that's where Cedric kind of grew up and got really grounded in a really environment of a lot of athletics, a focus on education. Hi, Cedric. Did your parents graduate high school or they just finished high school?
My mother went back for her GED as she was probably in her 50s. Probably late 50s. And my dad just grammar school.
Okay. So his dad and mom grew up in Georgia, working in rural Georgia, and then got into the docks and on loading fish and that kind of stuff on the East Coast. Did you help out, Cedric?
I was my dad's shadow. I wanted to follow my dad anywhere, so I would often go there. I wasn't able to work, and I'm sure because of liability things, but I was definitely exposed to the hard work that the longshoremen did in terms of loading and unloading the ships that would come into port.
Hmm. So another, any exposure that we get to different ways in which people make a living help us to kind of carve out our own living. And to remind the listeners a little bit more about your background, Cedric is the president and chief science officer of the American Council on Exercise. ACE Fitness is a leading nonprofit exercise professional and health coach certification organization. Their goal is to elevate professionals' careers by setting the highest industry standards. The organization helps people around the globe make their mission movement. Dr. Bryant develops strategies that deliver exercise science and behavior change, education in engaging and compelling ways. Over 90,000 people have become exercise professionals and health coaches equipped to evolve their respective fields. Dr. Bryant's academic achievements includes earning a doctorate in physiology and a master's degree in exercise science from Penn State University. He received the Penn State Alumni Recognition, Alumni Fellow, Board of Trustees Distinguished Alumni Awards. The Distinguished Alumni Award is the school's highest alumni honor given to select alumni who are considered leaders in their professional fields. And we learned that you have been raising four boys with your wife, Ginger. We haven't talked about her yet. When did you meet Ginger?
I met Ginger my second year of grad school, her first year, she was in the speech pathology program. And ironically, we both were at Rutgers at the same time as undergrads, but our paths never crossed there. But we had people that we both knew independently that at Rutgers that connected us at Penn State at one of those kind of grad social functions. And yeah, as they say, and I guess the rest is history.
And what kind of sports are your boys into?
My boys, they loved basketball, but much like their dad, they were involved in anything active. They played soccer, football, basketball, baseball. But I would say their real love and passion was basketball.
Hmm. And how old are they now?
Boy, now you're going to make me feel old. the youngest just turned 26, end of March. The oldest turned 33, the middle of March. And then we have 30 and 28 mm-hmm. are the middle.
And what are their names?
Okay, the oldest is CJ, Cedric Joseph, and he's not a junior. The J is for Joseph, because both my wife's dad and my dad were Joseph, so we gave him that for his middle name. Yeah. Then the second oldest is Benjamin, and then Eric is number three, and Chris is number four.
Hmm. Wow. So a lot of male energy in the house.
Yes. Yeah. My wife, she probably is ready for sainthood.
Well, the benefit of having four boys, if they are heterosexual, is that they'll bring women into the family.
Yeah, and we're blessed with two very beautiful young ladies that are. Part of our growing family, as well as in February of 2020, we had a little granddaughter, a new member of the family, little Linnea. And so, while 2020 has been a unusual year, it was quite a blessing and a bundle of joy that was added to our lives.
Wow. That's great. And everything was okay. The baby's okay.
Yes.
Mom's okay. Yeah. Okay. That's great. Well, we thought in this conversation, we were kind of getting your journey to how you've gotten to where you're at right now. And we talked a little bit about how things have changed in the coaching and mentoring arena with the American Council on Exercise. And we thought let's go further into the details of how can people shift their focus or make the behavior changes? And in the industry, how has the focus shifted? Cedric, can you talk a little bit about how the trainers are being trained differently?
Sure. One of the things that I think has been emerging over the last several years is that if I were to ask 10 people in a room, how many of you think that being physically active and eating healthy is a good thing for people to do? I would say virtually every hand would probably go up out of those 10 people. If I were to ask those same 10 people, how many of you are active on a regular basis, probably two hands would go up, according to statistics. And so, what's the disconnect between 10 people knowing that it really is a good and beneficial thing to do versus only two people doing it? What's responsible for that gap in terms of knowing what we should do and actually doing it? And it's really behavior change science. It's really how do we come alongside people and help them make those small, consistent, but challenging and necessary changes to move from an inactive lifestyle to a more active lifestyle. And one of the things that's been happening is I think people in the exercise science and physical activity and public health spaces have been recognizing that it isn't that people need more evidence that exercise is medicine, exercise really is quite effective in helping to prevent and manage many of our most common chronic illnesses and conditions. But what really is the challenge is how do we get people to take the prescription, if you will, to be more physically active? And that's where behavior science comes in and helping people to become empowered and give them the skills to make those small changes. Because every individual is really the foremost authority on his or her own lifestyle, and really helping people to recognize what are my barriers, what are the things that I particularly enjoy doing, where am I starting, how might I find those who can be around me, who can encourage and support me to make the healthy, active choice as opposed to sedentary choice. And also let people know that every bit of movement counts, in that I think too often we set the bar and expectations so high that people think that if I can't, you know, achieve a certain level, why bother? But it's just like, I use the analogy, it's like loose change. Every little bit of change is real money. And if you accumulate enough of it, it adds up into something that is sizable and impactful. And the same thing with exercise. Every bit of movement is like that loose change. And over time, that's going to accumulate into a real level of value. And so if you think about the American Diabetes Association, a few years ago, they changed some of their guidance in that little small activity snacks, I'd like to call them, where if you can just get up and move regularly, it can help you to better control your blood sugar. It doesn't require that you necessarily go to a gym for a workout or you go for a long run. Just getting up and basically breaking up your periods of inactivity with small bursts of activity helps in controlling your blood sugar. We know that in terms of helping to helping individuals to better manage their blood pressure levels, is that it doesn't require that the exercise activity be overly stressful or intense, but you can exercise within what we refer to as kind of the comfortable talking zone, kind of using the talk test, in that if you can talk but not sing, you're really within a good level of intensity that's going to help to bring about this blood pressure lowering effect, helping you to better control and reduce your odds of developing high blood pressure. So again, it's really kind of reshaping the expectations and the messaging so that people understand that every little bit counts, and just to start low and go slow is what I like to tell people who are just getting started. You don't have to go from 0 to 100, go from sitting on the couch to running a 5K or a 10K, but just get up and start with a 5-minute walk. And just keep building on that. And over time, you'll start to meet those recommended thresholds, but it has to be progressive and really focus on progression and not perfection. And I think that's too often what will cause people to slip up, is that they think they have to be perfect and they have to reach these unrealistic standards. And all we're really trying to do is trying to get people to start to acquire these little changes that over time will result in great outcomes. And a friend of mine who went on a tremendous personal journey where he lost several hundred pounds, and he had his tag is kind of 30 seconds to victory, because he was at a weight where he found it difficult to move for 30 seconds when he started. And now if you saw him, you know, you could never imagine that. And his thing is 30 seconds to victory. And his little quote is that ordinary things done daily result in extraordinary outcomes. And I think if people could capture that mindset for everything in life, is that it starts with that first step, and don't become discouraged, and just keep taking the next step and the next step. And before you know it, you're well on into your journey.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of research in cardiac rehabilitation and pervasive heart and hypertension difficulties. What's enough?
Well, the kind of minimum recommended guidelines is to accumulate 150 minutes of activity over the course of the week, ideally divided up into, say, about 30 minutes of activity accumulated at least, you know, five days a week. So that on most days, you're moving for about 30 minutes is kind of the minimum threshold that's recommended by the WHO, CDC, and, you know, and other groups. And so, but again, I think it's important for people to realize that we're talking about accumulated. So it isn't that you have to get it all in one dose in each day, but every little bit adds up. So if you, you know, maybe you go for a 5 or 10 minute walk in the morning, maybe you go for an after dinner walk for 15, 20 minutes, you've reached that minimum threshold. And the thing is that while some exercise is better than none, more is better than some. And so as you start to adapt to that, just gradually, you know, increase the duration for which you do that. And that's, and again, like, you know, some of your tracking devices, like with your step counters and so forth, that's where people can use, you know, step counts as a way to perhaps motivate themselves to take a few more steps each day. But again, it's all about gradually and consistently progressing, doing a little bit more, you know, each week, over time, and you really are going to experience some pretty powerful results.
And where's the line between when it becomes an obsession or a problem?
Well, it really, if you find, just like any addiction, if you find yourself, you know, avoiding or not participating in other important life events, if you're always fatigued or dealing with a variety of injuries, then you're probably doing a little too much and you probably need to back off.
Okay. So with all of this activity that's going on and then the lack of, what are you seeing? Are you seeing more people addicted to their screens?
Right now, that would be what the data seems to suggest, is that many of us are finding ourselves being less active than we were, say, pre-pandemic. But I'm hopeful and optimistic that as the weather continues to improve, that we'll start to see some reversal of that trend.
Yeah. And how have you and your family changed over the last year?
I would say probably, well, for me, one of the biggest changes, and it's been, I would say, a bit of a positive unintended consequence, is that I would typically travel about 100,000 miles a year in terms of air travel.
Wow.
I've not been on a plane since end of February 2020 to go back for the birth of my granddaughter. So I have had the real pleasant experience of being at home a lot more than I have in my career over the last 20 years or so.
Cool. All right. And any of the downside, do you, like, I was talking with someone earlier today, like, I almost feel a little bit shell-shocked, you know, coming out of this pandemic. Like, I'm starting to feel energized. The weather's upticking in Minnesota. So, you know, I mean, extraordinary weather in April. You know, we don't have normally 80 degrees. That's usually, you know, June or July. Anyways, it's causing everybody to, you know, go out and buy plants and, you know, just really do spring things. And so spring is usually kind of an energizing time to do new things. Mm-hmm. If you're coming out of this, what we have been of shell shock, and where more people are getting vaccinated, and so we're feeling like we can move around more freely, still wearing masks. So I'm just wondering if you have some tips for the emotional side of things, where the shell shock part. How can we re-engage with our emotional self and really help heal ourselves during this recovery time?
Sure. Well, a couple on the mental side as well as on the physical side, I think there's some caveats, if you will. First, given the fact that many of us haven't been you know, as active or anywhere close to our normal activity levels, we need to realize that because of the layoff, we can't expect to return to the activities that we may have been doing outdoors at the same level or duration, because our bodies have deconditioned because we haven't been using them in a similar manner. So again, that idea of kind of starting low and going slow and giving yourself some time to kind of get reacquainted with those activities is going to be important. And I do, from a mental health standpoint, getting outside, getting outdoors, has a positive impact on our mental health and mental outlook. And there are some physiological reasons for that and just environmental reasons. And, you know, one of the things we know is getting outside, outdoors in the sunlight, we get exposure, better vitamin D. Vitamin D, you know, is associated with helping with improving kind of, you know, bone health, helping in terms of dealing with anxiety and depression and stress. And so all those things are going to help us to have a better overall mental outlook and to feel better about ourselves. And just being out and seeing the flowers bloom and everything kind of reawaken for the spring, all those things have a positive impact on how we view ourselves and view the world around us. So I think that's why I'm hopeful and optimistic that as we continue to move through the season, that people will start to kind of reverse that trend of not being as active or as having as healthy a mental outlook as we may have during this whole pandemic period.
My husband and I have a daughter who's just turned 19 and college at UW-Madison. January 15th, for a whole number of reasons, we've been working toward more vegan diet. Mm-hmm. And so we finally made the commitment then. And I have just noticed that setting goals together as a family for movement and also to change our diets because we're, you know, not feeling as good. A lot more inflammation and those kinds of things. I was just feeling like we need to shift. And so it's taken a lot to understand how to, you know, rework the way in which I cook and allow a little bit more time, which mm-hmm. part of the benefit of the pandemic is because I haven't been going as many places, I can actually take the time to prepare meals more. And I'm going to continue that. But I've found that it's fun having like a family, something that we're doing differently, but we're doing it together and it's bonding us in kind of a cool way because we're sharing menus. You know, Matthew will join me with the shopping, saying, how can I help out here? Or, you know, like we're participating in creating those experiences together more. And my daughter's sending me podcasts on, you know, the vegan lifestyle and, you know, how to respond when people are really have a hard time with your lifestyle choice. I thought with exercise, isn't there some research about having a buddy, the importance of having a buddy?
Absolutely. And that's, I think, again, kind of one of what you're describing is what I like to refer to as kind of an unintended positive consequence of the pandemic, as reflected in kind of your family kind of becoming a team and kind of setting these goals and being able to encourage one another to really kind of the idea of kind of it takes a village to make some of these changes. And we know that if you have a commitment to an exercise partner, that you're more likely to adhere and stick with the program. And that partner doesn't even necessarily have to be a human. There's been a lot of research to suggest that people who have a pet, like for example a dog that you have to walk and so forth.
Oh yeah,
that can help encourage you to be more active.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, right. Because you're kind of forced to take them out to go to the bathroom, and then you end up working in a walk because they need the exercise. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, that's good. And business owners, what can they do with their staff to kind of pull together more of a wellness culture that could be really fun?
Well, I think it could be fun in that they could, you know, share. You know, what things they found that have worked for them, you know, in terms of kind of, you know, kind of managing kind of some healthy balance in terms of, you know, their lifestyle choices during the pandemic. They could even, you know, commit to getting together to do some activity. They could also, you know, use technology as a kind of friendly way to, you know, perhaps have some kind of friendly competition, if you will, where you can do, you know, maybe kind of team challenges where you can divide them up into teams and you can, you know, through, you know, apps and tracking devices, you know, have that kind of healthy competition to kind of spur them on to adopting some of these healthier lifestyle behaviors. I think it's really just a matter of kind of remaining engaged and concerned about your staff's well-being. Because I think one important part of leadership is that making sure that the folks that you work with understand that you truly care about them as whole people, not just as tools to be used to accomplish whatever the business goals are, but you're really concerned about them as whole individuals. And because I think when you demonstrate that caring, that communicates trust. And I think trust is a vital pillar to being an effective leader. Because if you don't have the trust of the folks that you're given the privilege to lead, I think it's difficult to be an effective leader. And so I think active listening is one of the ways in which I think we communicate caring. And so, you know, as a leader, just to, you know, to engage with your staff and understand, you know, how are they doing? What are their challenges? How might you assist them in those challenges are all, I think, important to really kind of effectively caring for your team, if you will, kind of during these challenge times.
Yeah, excellent. I was going to ask you just kind of a fun question. I know I wanted to say that you're involved in five different organizations: the National Academy of Medicine's Obesity Solutions Roundtable, the mm-hmm. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Active People Healthy Nation Partner Committee, the Prescription for Activity Task Force's Leadership Council and Executive Committee, and the Exercise is Medicine's Credentialing Committee, and World Health Organization's Global Action Plan on Physical Activity. Is there any way that you could sum up, like, what are you gathering? Part of innovation is gathering, like, lots of information from a wide variety of sources and then mm-hmm. putting together kind of this puzzle of, you know, pieces and figuring out, oh, that's how I can navigate forward. You know, here's based on what I'm seeing. What are you mm-hmm. seeing?
I would say with all of those organizations, probably if there's a common thread, it's really, I think the focus, much of the focus is on how can we affect the positive change in population health. And I think what all of those organizations are probably have in common or come to the realization is that the proper application of behavior change science is probably critical for us to really shift the needle forward. In that, I think for decades we've been accumulating the evidence that a lot of these interventions are quite effective, but we haven't really been able to get people to widely engage in the interventions. And I think what many of these organizations are recognizing is that it really comes down to helping individuals with the challenges that our lifestyle and environments present in making the healthy choice, not always the easy, most accessible choice for most of us. And so I think they're looking at trying to identify what are some of those systemic and structural challenges to making it easier and kind of more automatic, if you will, for people to kind of make that healthy choice, whether it's activity, whether it's nutrition, whether it's stress management and so forth. And so I think that's probably been kind of the common thread, if you will.
Yeah, like people are getting stuck with the behavior because there's an emotional connection there to whatever they've experienced. And a lot of it's trauma and us moving out of being traumatized and being able to sort out what are our feelings and how do I navigate through these experiences and how can I shift some things in my lifestyle that will make me feel better. Also is part of the equation of the behaviors that you're talking about, of getting on the ground with people, side by side with them, to see where they're really getting stuck or where they can move forward without shaming. You know, there's been a lot of body shaming going on and just even, you know, with the vegan lifestyle, I mean, they're just, I've experienced some real shaming conversations that I feel like make me feel small and make the other person feel really small. Like, I'm not making a judgment about their lifestyles. They can go ahead and eat all the meat they want. It's not about that for me. I mean, part of it is, yes, I've seen how animals are treated. And yes, the further along the path I get with yoga and kind of the path of Buddhism, I can see where and the more you meditate, the more you realize, oh, you know, I'm not liking how animals are treated. And why don't we eat dogs? You know, what has the training been, you know, in our culture for all, you know, we're just getting into systemic problems. We're at the beginning of really uncovering all these systemic problems in our society that are really keeping us from being our best selves. And that's kind of where, I mean, I'm not interested in kind of the preaching element of it. I'm interested in how can we navigate forward and not keep doing what we know doesn't work. We buy into these stuff.
Yes, and Nancy, there's two things you said there that really resonate with me. You talked about the importance of feeling, and you talked about kind of the shaming that can occur in really trying to perhaps well-intentioned address some issues or challenges that folks have. And I think one of the things I like to encourage people to do as it relates to becoming more physically active, as an example, is to not focus on the numbers, on weight loss, on how much I can lift, on how fast I can run a mile, but to start by focusing on how do you feel during and after your activity experience? Does it help you to feel more relaxed? Does it help you to feel more in control? And really kind of focus on how it's making you feel. And that can serve as that necessary hook or motivation to kind of get you in the game and kind of keep you in the game early on, because a lot of the number changes take time to occur, at least to a degree that most people get excited about. And then with regard to the idea of this notion of shaming and so forth, and you mentioned specifically body shaming. And one of the things, for example, with the Obesity Solutions Roundtable, we talk about is really using people first language to really kind of get away from this idea of shaming folks, because too often we will refer to so-and-so as being overweight or being obese, as opposed to being someone who was impacted by overweight or obesity. So we're not defining them by the condition, but we're saying they're impacted by a condition, because back in 2015, I think many people forget that the AMA defined obesity as a disease. It isn't a lack of discipline problem. It is a disease, just like heart disease, just like diabetes. It's a disease. And unfortunately, oftentimes we look at individuals who are challenged by body weight related issues as lacking discipline, and that's not the truth.
Right. It absolutely isn't. And you're right about the positive psychology part of this is really focusing on what we're doing right.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we at right now? What are we doing right? And what do we want to do more of? What are the little things that we want to improve on in mm-hmm. our life to make them a little better?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Good. Oh, gosh. Yeah. You and I could talk for a very long time about this stuff. We're very much on the same page of what we're finding and how we're shifting to work with people to really be where they're at and really address the emotional part. And I do think that just, you know, underlying every addiction, it started somewhere and it's usually around some trauma or cumulative trauma. And so if we get to addressing those areas in which we've been traumatized, I just think we'll have a much better outcome of people making long-term changes because we're getting it. It's a systemic thing. You know, this is like if we resolve this piece of where this all started, then you can change your dialogue around it. And there's a lot of research around it, but there's not a lot of... We need to get in the trenches with people and make the changes with them and realize it does take time, but you can make these little shifts every day that can, you know, show improvement. And that's
absolutely
encouraging.
I talk about sustainable change because I think that really is, that should be the ultimate goal.
Exactly. Okay, terrific. Well, thank you. Is there anything else that you feel we've... left out in this conversation that you would like to make sure that we address?
Boy, Nancy, I don't think we've left any stone unturned.
All right. Oh, wonderful conversation. Really nice to get to know you better. And congratulations on being a grandfather. There's just a real beauty in that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's... Yeah, little Linnea definitely has grandpa's heart.
That's sweet. All right. And hopefully you'll be able to see her a little more frequently.
Yes.
And thank you, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. Yes. And thank you for listening this week and for taking in our conversation. And now see what you can do in your own life to make the little subtle changes to help you feel better about your entire life. We'll see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. We've been doing this kind of work since 1992, helping small business owners and emerging entrepreneurial leaders with self-leadership mastery, business ownership success, and that leads to life success. We focus on the dual innovation journey of reinventing yourself as you redesign your business. We do this with one-on-one strategic mentoring sessions. We have several types of labs that you can participate in with your other peers. Both our entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab, which you can really get into the crux of how to run your business more effectively and become more competent. We have meaningful conversations that help with developing a culture that will work for you. I do weekly meditation and yoga that you can participate in to evolve yourself as you redesign your business. You can also sponsor this podcast. We're always looking for people to support our programming, build out our programming with us, and I especially love promoting you. You can get involved in all those different areas because when we mentor, you design a better life, a more fulfilling future as an entrepreneurial leader / innovator, as a competent business owner / practitioner, as a mentor / role model, and as a human being and master of self. Every client starts with a desire to shift something, clarify something, overcome challenges, grow profitability. We started with one entrepreneur. We've mentored thousands. We're ready to work with you. When you show up, we're here. So to get started, go to wementor.com. You can also call me at 612-804-8920, or you can reach me through email, nancy@wementor.com. get ready and take the next step today.